and that it's so close to Borer that it really shouldn't have gotten its own listing. It didn't have to be a Malacha by itself, and there's some technical reason why it got its own status. Having to do with its place in the Mishkan, and we'll have to talk about that a little bit more, about still how exactly does it make the cut. But in its essence, in its nature, it's so similar to Borer, it doesn't really deserve its own slot. And that statement, that that's essentially what Zohar is, seems to be at odds with Yerushalmi, as we saw, because Yerushalmi gives an example of Zohar which doesn't match Borer, which doesn't seem to fit in with the rules of Borer. And that example is what? Spitting into the wind. Right? If somebody spits into the wind, and the wind then disperses it, so the Yerushalmi has the statement, Chayiv Mishum Zohar, and that's a little bit difficult because it doesn't seem to be that it would follow the rules of Borer. Borer is about separating good from bad, which is known halachically as Ochel and Psolas, and that doesn't seem to be a component here. So how do we deal with that? So it seems like there's a machlokas here. And that apparently is borne out by a few other sources as well. Later on, the Yerushalmi has another passage which seems to differ from the Bible, because our Gemara over here, on Ayin Gimel Amud Beis, has equated Zoreh, Borer, Umarakeh, Hainu Borer, Hainu Zoreh, Hainu Marakeh, while the Yerushalmi has a similar statement, but with a key difference. Yerushalmi also says there are three acts that are about being Mavir Psolas, about removing waste or unwanted parts, and the three are different. Two of them are the same, but Zoreh is missing from the list. Right? Yerushalmi, it's Borer, Mishamer, which isn't technically an Av otherwise, and Merakit. But what we saw there is that there actually was a Machlokas in the commentaries on the Yerushalmi. The Pnei Moshe upholds the version that's there. But the Korban Ha'edah suggests that the Girsa is wrong, that the Girsa should match the Bavli, and should indeed put Zohar as Mavir Psolas. So then the question is, what does the Korban Ha'edah do about the spitting Gemara? So there also we saw that there was a little bit of a different focus in terms of how the Pnei Moshe and the Korban Ha'edah interpreted that statement about spitting. And the Yerushalmi goes on to say that kol davar shaharuach mechasro, which the Pnei Moshe understands, anything you need the wind for, anything that the wind is necessary, without the wind you wouldn't have been able to do it, that is Zohar according to the Yerushalmi. While the Korban Ha'edah focuses on dividing something up, on something being split up. It's still difficult because it doesn't have good and bad, it doesn't have ochel and psolas, but he does emphasize that something is being split up. By the way, I didn't pay attention to this so much yesterday, but in terms of that difference between the Pnei Moshe and the Korban Ha'edah, so it could be they also even translate the Gemara differently. Noticing afterwards that the language in the Gemara that puts as a principle, kol davar shehu mechusar l'ruach. So we translated mechusar l'ruach as meaning it's lacking wind. It needs the wind in order to accomplish what needs to be accomplished. And that's consistent with how the Pnei Moshe, says it. Klomar shal yidei haruach hu naseh, hu bilti haruach lo hayanaseh. That it needs the wind, and without the wind, it wouldn't be there. So it's mechusar l'ruach, it's missing ruach. But Korban Ha'edah, it could be that he translates that word mechusar differently. Because the Korban Ha'edah says, perish haruach mechasro u'mefaro l'chalokim dakin. He seems to be translating that word mechusar as the impact the wind has on the substance. That it's diminished by the wind, it's divided up by the wind. And therefore, it's interesting, it's a whole different spin on the language of the Yerushalmi. Maybe it reflects the Korban Ha'edah again taking a different stance on what's going on. So yeah, it sounds like from the Yerushalmi that it's differing from the Bavli in terms of what Zohar is all about. Korban Ha'edah minimizing that a little bit, minimizing that difference. But we mentioned also that the Egwe Tal added a third indication that the Yerushalmi is at odds with the Bavli. Because Yerushalmi also has a standard for Borer. And what was that standard? It has to be completely separate. You have to succeed in completely removing all the waste. Yerushalmi gives an example of somebody who's sitting and separating something all day long and yet does not violate Borer. Why not? Because he doesn't finish the job. Apparently, if you're not 100% successful, it's not Borer. So when it comes to Zorah, that's not really feasible. Zorah does not 100% get rid of all the waste by its very nature. So Zorah can't really meet that standard. So says the Egle Tal, it's another indication that Zorah and Borer are not the same in the vision of Yerushalmi. Right, so far so good. It seems to be three indications so far that the Yerushalmi is different from the Bavli. The Bavli is about separating, just like Borer, while apparently the Yerushalmi is focusing on using wind. Then we saw that there's another very important passage in the Bavli elsewhere, the Gemara Maseches Bava Kamma. The Gemara there talks about Nezikin, talks about damaging somebody's property, which theoretically you could also do together with wind, in the partnership with wind. Let's say you fan a flame and you cause the fire to move and destroy somebody else's property. So you'll be liable. One of the other Nezikin is Eish. But the Gemara seems to say that if the wind played a big role in transferring the flames, you did a little bit, but the wind did more, so then you'd be exempt. You'd be potter. So asks the Gemara, if you use the wind, you're potter? Don't we find in Hilchos Shabbos that there's a malacha called Zorah? Zorah Baruch Nisayaso, when it comes to Shabbos, if I throw something into the wind and the wind does my work for me in separating the bad from the good, I'm chayav. So what does the Gemara end up saying after a little bit of back and forth? What's the key issue? Meleches Machsheves. So that was basically where we left off. And we left off with a question that it's not at all clear what the Gemara means to say by putting Meleches Machsheves as the key factor here. And in discussing a little bit, we came up with two basic suggestions. And either that Machsheves, it's a general question, it's not just about this Gemara, it's about this key phrase, Meleches Machsheves, which comes up all over Hilchos Shabbos. So what are we talking about? Are we talking about intent? Machshava, is that the key idea, that you accomplish something you meant to accomplish? Or is it about significance? Chashivas? So we're never really sure what Meleches Machshavas means. It's never totally defined for us in Shas. And here, this is a major source which is equally ambiguous about what exactly it's supposed to mean. That was essentially where we left off yesterday. Everything good so far and everything? Everything makes sense? So I asked you to look a little bit at the Rush and at the much longer comment of the Yad Ramah, which perhaps give us a little bit of more substance to deal with in terms of what that Gemara is getting at. Although I think both of them still leave us a little bit wondering. Now, what does the Rush say? The Rush basically says, the Rush in Bava Kamma, that really this should be grama, this should be causative. You're not really doing the malacha, you're causing it to happen. So you throw something up into the air, that's not itself a malacha, you're causing the wind to run away with it. But malachas machshavas, which doesn't add that much to our understanding, it seems to be saying that technically this should have been excluded. It should have been something you are not really liable for, but because of the technical aspect of Shabbos, the Malachas Machsheves makes you chayev, so it turns Zorah into a malacha. Zorah, by its nature, shouldn't necessarily have met the rules. It's not really a direct action, it's causative, but because of Malachas Machsheves, boom, it gets on the list. That's what it sounds like the Rush means. The Yad Ramah, a very lengthy discussion. I don't know if you all had a chance to work your way through the whole Yad Ramah. So he has a lot to say, just parenthetically, we shouldn't miss this while we're here. There is another interesting aspect of this Yad Ramah, it's linked to do with Hilchos Shabbos, which is the famous Yad Ramah for a different reason. He has a statement tucked in there, which is quoted in a lot of other contexts. You ever learn Bava Kamma? So one of the major issues before you even begin Bava Kamma is the Torah tells us in Parshas Mishpatim, which we'll read in a few weeks, that there is a chiyuv for Nezikin. you damage somebody's property, you have to pay. But the Torah never spells out over there that there's an Isser Nezikin. It doesn't say clearly in Parshas Mishpatim when the Torah tells us you have to pay for damaging somebody's property, that you're not allowed to do it. So what if I come with my checkbook and my sledgehammer, and I say I want to smash in your windshield, and I'm ready to pay right now. Here, I'll pay for the damages. I'll pay for the damages before I do it. So is it mutter to do that? Is it only required to be paid for the damages, but there's no Isser involved? So that's a big discussion. You ever learn Bava Kamma? That's the first thing people want to know. So there's so much discussion there about your liability for damaging property. What if I want to do it on purpose and I'm willing to pay? Is that mutter? So everyone assumes it's not mutter. It's just not clear from the Torah what the Isser is. Sorry, so Baltashkis, the whole discussion by the site, who doesn't think it's Baltashkis, I think there's what to say about that. Maybe someday we'll have a chance to discuss that more at length. And many theories about what it is. Maybe Parshas Mishpatim in a few weeks, maybe we'll come back to it a little bit. But one theory, or two theories, are found in the Yad Rahman Baba Basra, this same passage in the Yad Rahman, where he says, he talks about it. Anyone see what he said about this? He says, the violation of V'yahavta l'reicha kamocha, and it's a violation of Lifnei'iver, which is an interesting spin on Lifnei'iver. So he throws those two ideas in the middle of this long passage. He says that's what one violates if one damages someone's property. So this Yad Rama is quoted in many other discussions because of that line, which I'd like to do what we're talking about today. But since you saw the Yad Rama, you should just be aware it's for a whole different reason, a famous comment. Yes? So that's a whole interesting discussion. Apparently, Lifnei'iver has got a lot of elements to it. So putting something dangerous out there is Lifnei'iver. And maybe Mishpatim, maybe we'll have an opportunity to talk about it. It's not really at all about the sugya, but since it's in the Siyad Rama, I wanted to take note of it.
Or creating a situation where there's a...
Could be both. Could be both. Maybe we'll talk about that maybe a little bit in Mishpatim. So in any case, the Siyad Rama has a lot of discussion about this idea of Melechas Machshaves and the difference. And does anyone feel he has a handle on what he's saying there? And how he's understanding this concept of Malachim HaShevis? Anybody want to take a stab at it? It's a little bit difficult to discern what he's saying. What he seems to be getting at is that this is not called Brahma. This is not called something that you are just causing and you're disassociated from. Because you have done everything you can do. Everything that the human being can do with this action, we know there's a malacha called Zorah. The malacha of Zorah involves separating something through throwing it into the wind. So therefore, the whole human action is the throwing it up, and then it's essentially irrevocable at that point. So you've done your part. So that's what the malacha is. The malacha is then defined as you're doing that part of it. And the fact that nature then takes over, that doesn't make it a grama. That doesn't make it only causational. If there was a malacha that you could do yourself, and instead of doing it yourself, you made some contraption to set it in motion, maybe we'll call that a grama. But here, you've done everything that the human being can do in this process, and then nature takes over as a necessary part of the process. That is no less grama, for example. He doesn't make this comparison, but say planting. Our first malacha we spoke about this year, about Zareya. So clearly there's a major role for nature to play in the growing of plants. And you only do so much, but we don't say that that's a grama, even though it's a discussion. We've touched upon it a little bit, that there were those who thought that maybe we should say a human being can't really plant something. But Lamaisa, that's not how we relate to it. We relate to it that you do everything the human being can do. And that's what's going on here as well. So I think it was Sandy and Jonathan.
The Lilos.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you are basically doing it. Right? You are basically doing a Zora without nature. So therefore, why? If the whole idea is saying that the only reason that you're chayav is because you've done everything and nature is essential for this malacha to happen, so it's not, because you can separate it yourself by hand.
I mean, assuming that first of all, is Zohar, which we have to see if that's Zohar rather than
I'm saying it creates the same result.
Right, but even if you're talking about, not necessarily that example specifically, we'll have to see, but if, let's say, you want to talk about blowing, so let's say you're introducing a wind factor, so that might still be the same kind of thing, that still your breath may also be the wind, but the point is that you are doing the human part of the process. So wind is its own force that you're using in order to separate things, and the way you do that is you do up until point X, and then the wind takes over.
And is this like a Garmi kind of idea?
I mean, it's closer to actually...
Yeah, meaning, I haven't finished the whole piece, but like...
You don't necessarily... The Garmi and Grama are just the same idea of causation, but two different levels in terms of how close you are. So in Nezikin, you find that language. In Shabbos, you don't find it as much. I don't know if it necessarily...
Is that what he's trying to say?
I don't know if you necessarily have to introduce that kind of... I don't know if it helps us too much to put that into the mix. But it still leaves us a little bit ambiguous, a little bit unclear about what's going on. Are we basically saying that Zohar is an exception, that really it doesn't match the rules, but because it's a malacha, so it gets snuck in? Or is this telling us some sweeping principle about malachas machshavas? I think we're still left a little bit unclear about this. And to give you a modern example of this ambiguity, there is an interesting tshuva. And the tshuva is Bar Yehoshua, the name we quoted often in the first semester. Bar Yehoshua was a great posek from Tel Aviv, lived about 34 years ago, or one. His name was the Yeshua Ehrenberg. So he has a letter there to the Machon Technologia, to the Technological Institute. He was working with various issues of technology and Hilcha Shabbos. And the question was, if you have something that's caused indirectly. Koach sheni. A koach rishon, if you cause something with your effort, and then that causes something else, so it's already twice removed, koach rishon, koach sheni. So if you do a malacha like that on Shabbos, so are you chayav? It's already twice indirect. So apparently their position, this machon, sounds like from what he was writing to them, that they were machmer. That they thought that because of malachas machshavas, even though you're a couple of steps removed from the process, if you cause something that causes something else, you are still going to be chayiv because malachas machshavas. And they reference, guess which gemara? Over kama daf samach, zora v'roch masayasa. Again, the significance of the malach of zora, the major principles in Ovda Shabbos, is very, very substantial. Much citation. This malacha, again, it's not one of the malachas you hear talked about all the time, but these gemaras that quote it and they deal with it have major impacts on the shot. So here, apparently, this machon was saying that even if your something is very indirect, so it's still going to be a chiyuv for Shabbos because of malachas machshavas. That's what the gemara in Bava Kamma seems to be saying. And the Dvar Yehoshua himself disagreed, or at least suggested to disagree. And first, he notes, just as a technicality, he notes that the tshuva is Matazeh Avram, who we also mentioned last semester, Avram Steinberg, who's the great grandfather of the well-known contemporary medical ethicist, Dr. Avram Steinberg. So the Matazeh Avram writes that anything that's indirect, he thinks is already Pater on Shabbos because it's not comparable to the Mishkan. In the Mishkan, they didn't do their actions through causing something to happen, but they did everything directly. So too, that's a requirement in Hilcha Shabbos. But for a different reason, the Dvar Yehoshua himself suggests that he thinks there's another reason to pater here, to exempt. And this also draws upon a discussion we had in the first semester. So you have to figure out, there are different types of averos in the Torah. Some averos are about results. You don't want something to happen. And some averos are about actions. You're not supposed to do something. So if an avero is about a result, we're less concerned about whether you do it directly, indirectly, causationally. It doesn't matter as much. If you bring about the result, that's a problem. And there are other averos which are more about actions. And therefore, if you do them indirectly, it makes a difference. So what is Shabbos? Is Shabbos about actions or about results? So it seems like it's about actions. And this is a topic that we discussed at some length in the beginning of the year, that this was somewhat of a debate. That's why, again, we mentioned yesterday that this sugya is a very good reintroduction to Hilchos Shabbos, because there's so many basic principles that get drawn into this discussion of Zohar. So here it is again, the question of what is Melachos Shabbos referred to? Is it something, you're not supposed to do, or something you're not supposed to cause? So apparently, Dvar Yeshua assumes, which we saw last semester seems to be the majority view, that it's about not doing something. So since that's really the purpose, that's really the issue, well, sasa ko malacha, you shouldn't do a malacha. So if it's already, he says, even koach rishon, even if it's already at one remove, that's already not a direct violation, not an actual violation of malacha shabbos. So his inclination is really to say the opposite of the Mahon Technologia. They said we should be more machmir even if it's twice removed, because malachas machsheves, your intent is being fulfilled even if it's indirect. While he goes in the opposite direction. He says Shabbos is about doing things. If you're causing them but not doing them, that's already a whole different story. And Zohar is its own chiddush. Once again, Zohar and Malachas Machshavas, it tells us that Zohar is a malacha. So it's the same question. Is the sugya basically telling us there's a principle of Malachas Machshavas which makes all of Shabbos a little more machmir? Usually it's a kula, by the way, but in this context, maybe it's a chumra in terms of when your intent gets fulfilled. You're going to be chayiv even if it's indirect. Or does it mean something else? Is it just something, a specific statement about Zohar, that Zohar has a unique status since the Gemara tells us it's Malacha, so it makes the list, even though it doesn't seem to conform to what otherwise would be Hilchos Shabbos?
I think that this is basically coming to refer this Malacha, whatever we said yesterday, mm-hmm. about the two possibilities, what can be Malacha Shabbos.
I think
if
so too.
Mashavet is whatever you intend to do, like the mindset that you want to do, so then it's going to be like the Shira that says that it's where the result and not the action. But if Lecha Mashavet is just like whatever you thought and you mind to do, and so then it's going to be, I don't care about the result. As long as you wanted to do the mindset, you did whatever possibility for you to do as a nature human being, like as a human being, then you hire, even though the action is going to be whatever it's going to be. And it makes sense also, like in Shabbos is not a rational, like it's not something that we can think rationally. Like, to turn the light out in Shabbat, doesn't make sense that you now have to do it. The reason that you can do it is because God said you can do it. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I don't care what's going to be the result, if you made the action, so you made the action was made, then you're going to be high. But when you come to the Zikin is not something that you just not, I can damage somebody's property, not because God told me, rather because it makes sense that I'm not going to do it. Therefore, I don't care what was the action, if it was directly or indirectly, if the result was that I damaged it, I'm still going to be fired.
Okay, so I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. So I just want to reformulate some of it. So Sam, you can comment in a second. But I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense, and reformulate it a little bit. I think in terms of, you're saying two separate points. So first of all, in terms of the two perspectives here, about what Malachas Machshavas means, I think that it does bear out, maybe it's a little bit differently from the lines, that either it's a question of, does there a broad principle come out here, that anytime your intent is fulfilled, you'll be chayiv, even if it doesn't seem to fit otherwise? Or is it a specific statement that Zohar gets a status, even though it wouldn't otherwise make the cut, and we can't necessarily see a principle here to always make you liable for your intent being fulfilled? That's one issue. Now, in terms of the difference you mentioned between the turning on lights and Nezikin, so we'll phrase it a little bit differently, but I think the point is well taken, that Nezikin is clearly a result-based issue, and then you have to figure out how that impacts why Brahma should be Pater. That makes requires a little bit more explanation, but it's not so much for now. But, what it seems like, but still have that fits to the logic of it. We have to try to understand probably a different time, but it does seem to be more of a result-based action. While Shabbos, there are many indications that it's less result-based, and it's more about what you are doing. Not necessarily because it's less rational, but there are a number of indications that that's what Shabbos is about, and it's about your being at rest, And if you're at rest, even if malacha happens, that's not a violation of Shabbos, at least on a strictly speaking Torah level. Sammy?
Yeah, I didn't understand how the Gemara and Baruch Hama is kolachshi.
It's not. He's just saying that you can derive from here a principle that malachas machsheves, can you derive from here a principle that malachas machsheves means you're chayav for your intent even if you're removed from it? Even, let's say, then now extended to Koach Sheni? Or is that not what the Gemara is saying? So the Machon Technologia was apparently thinking that's what it's saying, that malachas machsheves means you fulfill your intent, boom. And the Dvar Yeshua thought, no, it's not saying anything like that, and for other reasons he wouldn't say that, and the Gemara is really limited to Zora. Okay, any questions about it? It's a little bit complicated. Everyone following so far? Yes? No? Any issues? Okay. So, all of that is interesting in and of itself. But maybe that also gives us a little bit of insight into the Bavli's perspective. Right, this passage in Bava Kamma is in the Bavli. So maybe this fills in the picture a little bit about what the Bavli is getting at. So here, let's think about it this way. So we have a malacha that was in the Mishkan. In the Mishkan, they would throw stuff up into the air and do that for the purposes of selecting good from bad, or bad from good. So what do we derive from that, practically? So maybe one could suggest, and there are some who suggest this way, that the Bavli, especially when we take it together with Bava Kamma, and invoking Meleches Machsheves, is focused on purpose. It's focused on intent. That when it comes to Zorah, Zorah was using the wind, not stop using it, but using it to select, using it to divide. So therefore, that's the Bavli's understanding. That's what Zohar needs. It needs to be something that is selected, not simply wind usage. While maybe the Yerushalmi is less interested in the purpose and is more interested in the form, in what's happening. So what was the form of what was going on in the Mishkan? Wind was being invoked. You were doing something in order to harness the wind. So maybe that's enough to qualify as the malacha. And that's an important distinction, an important setting up of the aspects here, which we'll come back to hopefully in a few minutes. Yes, sir.
Is this a broad principle for the Yerushalmi? Because by Zoraya, we didn't necessarily see that so much.
Because there was a focus more on the function than anything. Right. So it's a good question whether or not we can develop a consistent theory that the Yerushalmi always does that. Or maybe it does both.
We'll have to, how do they differentiate you? How do we know?
Maybe it's willing to take both aspects. We'll have to see if that could possibly bear out. So all of our discussion so far is assuming that the Bavli and the Yerushalmi are at odds with each other. And this is a pretty popular assumption. It's an assumption that many contemporary Sfarim take. And it's one that also has classic support. And there were earlier great Gedolim who maintained this. Among them, very notably, Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Rabbi Akiva Eiger has a tshuva, which we'll come back to at some length. It's a simon chaf. In the first section of the Tshuva Rabbi Akiva Eiger, where Rabbi Akiva Eiger says exactly this. He discusses a question, halacha lemaisa, about wind usage. We'll come back to what the question was. Where it was not a bo'er aspect. And he says, quite simply, we don't paskin like the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi's idea that spitting into the wind is a violation of Zorah, the Bavli disagrees with. And he says, for that reason, the great Rishonim who codified Halacha, such as the Rush and the Rif, didn't bring this Yerushalmi. This Yerushalmi is a very significant chiddush lahalacha. The Rishonim should have recorded it. And he says they didn't record it because the Babli disagrees. It's an assumption of Yerushalmi against the Babli. And he brings another indication of that. So this will be the fourth indication. He says the Gemara in Bava Kamma that we were just talking about. What's the topic of that Gemara? In the context of the Zikin, what did the Gemara ask? The Gemara wants to know, if you do something, you're chayv. What happens if you don't do it, but the wind does it for you? Right? So if I fan the flame, I'm chayv. And if the wind does it for me, maybe not. So what's the structure there? That there are actions which, if you do yourself, you're chayv. And the only thing Gemara wants to know is, what if I have the wind do the work for me? And it brings as a proof, or a potential proof, the melacha of Zorah. So says Rabbi Akiva here, so according to that Gemara, you can't tell me that the only issue is I'm using the wind. And if I wasn't using the wind, I'd be fine. The whole premise of the Gemara is it's something that itself is an Isser. And the question is, what if you have the wind do the Isser for you? It can't be that if you remove the wind, there's no problem. So if you're going to tell me that it's not about some kind of Borer process, it's not about separating good from bad and independent Malacha, but it's simply about using wind, and if I were to do it with my hands, it would be fine. That doesn't make sense in the Gemara Bava Kamma. The whole issue the Gemara wants to know about is, what if I have the wind do the Isser for me? So it has to be something which, even without the wind, if I use my hands, would already be an Isser. So therefore, his premise is, the Babu's perspective is that we're basically talking about Borer through wind, and that if there was no other malacha component, it wouldn't be an issue. You follow what he's saying? Any questions about that? Does that make sense? And basically, according to the Babli, it's not that the wind is the Isser. The wind is the way of doing the Isser. So it has to be that the separation itself is the Isser. So this way, Rabbi Akiva Eiger expresses that this whole idea of spinning into the wind is not accepted by the poskim for the most part, because the Talmud Babli disagrees with it. The Chiddush of Yerushalmi that the Babli doesn't accept. The Chai Adam made this point as well, that the Babli rejects it, and that's why all these Rishonim didn't record it. So all of that works within the popular assumption that the Babli and Yerushalmi again are disagreeing. There were those who tried to make peace in the world, and who tried to assert that maybe the Babli and the Yerushalmi are not disagreeing. So how could you do that? There are a couple of different directions you could come at. If you want to say that the Babli and the Yerushalmi are not disagreeing, a couple of different ways. What kind of ways could you do it? How could you possibly start suggesting that? Sammy? Sorry?
Make the case of spitting in the air board.
Okay, so that's one thing. One thing I could do is I could take the Yerushalmi's case and make it a Borer case. How would that work? How could I do that? It doesn't seem to be Borer. Right, but Zorah is Borer. Zorah is a type of Borer. And our whole issue is that Babli calls it Borer and the Yerushalmi doesn't because it's spitting. So one way I could do it is I could say that spitting is also a type of Borer. Or this case of spitting is Borer. So how could that be true? Okay, so there were those, this is something Avram brought up yesterday, that maybe you could say that spit is made up, this is all beautiful imagery, spit is made up of different physical components, and that you are separating them from each other. This is a suggestion that was made by Nechemdas Yisrael. Nechemdas Yisrael was a student of the Avnei, or a student of the Eglei Tal. His name was Rameir Dan Plotsky. He wrote a fascinating Lumbashaykh on Chumash called the Kli Chemda. Again, I want to emphasize, by the way, again, for those of you who here, is to not worry so much about the names. I'm just mentioning for your edification. It's not going to be a major expectation. But the Chemdas Yisrael makes the suggestion that Avram and Sammy are getting at here, that maybe there's some type of borer process here. You're separating the saliva from its elements. Now you also have to address the fact that you have no intent to do that. You're not trying to.
This is what the Korban Eidah says, no?
It sounds like right. The Korban Eidah seems to say that. It doesn't explain it that much, but you have to say that within the Korban Eidah. It's true. You have to make it match that. So the Chemdas Yisrael also acknowledges that even if that's happening, which is itself questionable, you're not trying to do that. So therefore, at least it would be a Mu'akha Shein Tzrucha Wadufa. You have no intent, no interest in that consequence. So then he suggests, okay, maybe Yerushalmi is assuming that Mu'akha Shein Tzrucha Wadufa is Chayim in this statement. Maybe the statement is according to Rabbi Yehuda.
But why is that
Mu'akha
Shein Tzrucha
Wadufa? You do want it. No, you're spitting because you want to spit it out, presumably. You're not going to be able to retrieve these different elements. It's not like you're going to...
You're keeping what's in your mouth.
Right, they're saying if you're spitting it out and this wind is now going to, you don't need the wind to spit it out of your mouth. You need the wind to divide it up in the air, and then you're going to be able to collect back the elements and put them to the lab and do something with them. So presumably not. So it's hard to say this is a goal you have on purpose. So you have to say it's at best a malach shein tzricha l'gufa. Okay, so maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's malach shein tzricha l'gufa, and maybe you're chayav.
That assumption that Malach Shein Tzrucha L'Gufa is a little tedious. Rabbi Kneider points out that we're talking about borer here, or separating two things, so what you intend is a lot more relevant. Meaning, if you're throwing out a pail of water, you don't want, even if it has different things in it, like even if it's like a real pail of water with like actual stuff inside, and you can actually like separate it by throwing it out the window, you don't want anything in the pail of water. So it's
even less, you think, than a Malach Shein Tzrucha L'Gufa. You have absolutely no connection to what's happening in terms of the division. So you find that even harder to believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, could be. Yes, sir?
Wouldn't that make it more like psikresha?
Psikresha, not according to the definitions we had previously. It's not that you're doing A and causing B. It's you're doing the malacha, you're dividing it, but you're not dividing it for the purpose of dividing it. You have no interest in the division.
But that is psikresha l'nichalei.
Psikresha l'nichalei is a malacha shen tzrucha l'gufa. So, you know, it's the same kind of thing. Essentially comes out that you have no interest in the result. So this is a difficult thing to say. To say that it's an active borer, which there are those who try to suggest, or some have a different version that you're separating it from your body. Maybe that's what we mean by borer. Rav Asher Weiss in his Sefer suggests and rejects that maybe your Shami doesn't spell it out, but maybe there's food in your mouth that you're trying to spit out and you're trying to have divided up. But all of that's a little bit speculative. So there are efforts to say that spitting somehow is borer. They're all somewhat difficult. It's all a little bit hard to imagine that that's really a viable reading of what Yerushalmi is saying. Sammy?
You do another thing. The opposite make the Bible not borer, because it's only really Rashi who points that out.
Okay, so that's another approach. We'll come back to that approach in a second. Hold on to that approach. So before we get to that approach, so one approach was to say that Yerushalmi's example is a form of borer. Another approach Sam just mentioned we'll come back to. Before we leave the Yerushalmi, you could also maybe tweak the Yerushalmi. Maybe there's some change we could make in what the statement is. Maybe it's even a textual mistake. And maybe that could help us, all right?
You say Yerushalmi is going to be Zora?
If you change the word, you mean change Zora to Meshamer. So it changes also that one, change the word Zora to Meshamer.
The other way around.
So if you change, how's it going to help? You change
Meshamer to Zora.
Right, so that last passage will then match. Right. But how do we deal with the spitting example? Right. Would the spitting example make sense still for Zora?
No.
So maybe you could tweak it. There are those who suggest even just textually. So for example, the Aruch HaShulchan asserts that maybe there's basically a typo here. Let's change a letter. Let's say it's not Zoreh, but...
Zoreh.
Well, Zoreh is a possibility also, but the Aruch HaShulchan says Zoreh. Maybe it's about throwing something versus Arabic. So that's a little bit hard to swallow. But it's interesting to see that the Bir Halacha, I think that's what you're thinking of, the Bir Halacha has a similar theory, but it's different. And it doesn't require changing the Gersa. The Bir Halacha quotes the Alpha in Menashe, and it becomes very significant. Right, did you see this? It's in the end of Shin Yud Tes. It was on the list. He quotes the Alpha Menashe that he also thinks it's about Madr Dalaramis versus Arabic. It's about causing something to move in the public space. But his explanation of how it could say that, it's not because he changes the hay to a cook. It's not because of Zori instead of Zora. But, and through this handwriting, it's very easy to imagine doing that, but that's not what he does. But what does he say? That no, Gemara means to say Zoreh. But what's the point by invoking Zoreh? This goes back to our question in Bava Kamma. Right? How did Bava Kamma want to use Zoreh? Not to talk about the malach of Zoreh, but to teach us that if you use the wind to do your work for you, you could still get in trouble. Right, that was the problem, that was the point of Bava Kamma Daf Samech. So says the Alpha Menashe here too. If I carry something Bereshus HaRabim, I'm violating a malach. What if I don't carry it, but I let the wind carry it? I spit something into the air, and I let the wind carry it, Dalet Amos. So then, that's also called carrying. How do I know it's called carrying? Maybe if I let the wind do the work, it's not my fault. Mishum Zoreh. Because the halacha of Zoreh, just like the part of the Kama tells us, that Zoreh might teach us that wind usage is still your problem. So too, if I carry the wind, maybe that's also called carrying. It is, it's a big chiddush. Hi.
It does make it more palpable with Mara's answer to the comment about the Shevet.
That's we're talking about everything then. It's the same Melech Mashevet.
The fact that now it's no longer, before it was this Melech Mashevet, we saw Melech Mashevet as this lower standard, mm-hmm. which normally is not the case. Here it makes it more sound like you had the intention to do the Melech, the wind might have helped you because Shas and Melech was about Melech Mashevet. It's not about a lower standard, it's just about what the standard is in general.
It's in it by all Melechas. Right, that's a sweeping principle. Hi.
Even with the Aruch HaShulchan, so first of all, he's completely on the Ramah, and even with the Bior HaLacha, is he assuming that the Ramah also...
We haven't talked about the Ramah yet, so we'll bring the Ramah in a minute, but you'll see there are many who disagree with the Ramah. The Aruch HaShulchan is not at all the only one, but you're right. We'll get to the Ramah in a second. Yeah?
Does it work with
Yehli Tal? Yehli Tal about the difference between the Bavli and the Rishalmi?
Yeah.
Not necessarily, because these are all attempts to reconcile the Bavli and the Rishalmi, and his premise is that they argue, so let's assume they don't work.
So is that going to be kasha? Would it be like?
Presumably they don't have to agree, because this premise is already different. But the Eglei Tal assumes they're arguing, and these are all attempts to bring them together. There is another typo version. The Eshel Avram. Eshel Avram, there's two Eshel Avrams, just in general, that Prima Gadim's commentary in the Shulchan Aruch is broken up into different sections. One of them is called Eshel Avram, which is a commentary on the Magen Avram. But this is the other Eshel Avram. The other Eshel Avram is written by the Buchacha Rav, also a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. So he says the typo theory that was guessed over here before, that it's not Zoreh or Zoreh, but it's Zoreya, that it's an issue of watering the ground. Yeah, could be. So that we know that there's a problem we talked about a few months ago about watering the ground because you make things grow. So maybe spitting on the ground is also an issue. The halacha, by the way, when we talked about Zoreya, we saw that there were those who explicitly said that's not true. But he's assuming maybe that's what the Yerushalmi is saying, that spitting into the air and letting the wind scatter the effects, that will also be an issue of Zoreya. Yes.
Do we use the carrying also?
Well, that was the addition to the other. Does he assume it's Karen? Or do we assume it's Karen?
Yeah, like if you actually did that.
Right, it's not clear. It doesn't seem to be brought, lahalacha, that it is. If you really tried to purposely carry something to Adamus, maybe it would be. But I don't know if that's brought. So, in general, what have we seen so far? So, we've seen now either that they argue, Bavli and Yerushalmi, or we can reconcile them by making spinning a type of Borer. Or we can reconcile them by saying it's not really talking about Zora at all, it's talking about a different Malach. What's another way to reconcile them? So Sammy said, instead of bringing the Rishalmi in line with the Babli, let's bring the Babli in line with the Rishalmi. And there, so what Sammy said before is that we should say the Babli is not about Bora. That's harder to say for a lot of reasons. But maybe what we can do is we can say the Bavli is not exclusively about Borer. That the Bavli does believe that Zora is about separating bad from good. That seems to be pretty clear. But maybe we could say that there's a little bit more to it. That maybe what the Bavli is maintaining is that Zora has two components to it. It has separating bad from good. And therefore it's linked and could have been connected to Borer and Merake. But it's not only that. And it does have its own status. So it's also throwing things into the wind. So therefore, maybe if you have one of those two components, it's still called Zohar. Or at least, maybe it's a Tolda of Zohar. Maybe it's similar enough to Zohar to be a Tolda. And maybe that's what the Yerushalmi means. And maybe the Bavli would even agree. Maybe the Bavli is saying, yes, Zohar is about Borer. It's about separating. But it also has the fact that it's done through wind. And therefore, if something matches the form, even if it doesn't match the purpose, maybe that could make it a Tolda. Or you could even say more than that. Maybe you could say it's the actual Malacha of Zohar. It seems a little easier to call it a Tolda, but maybe it's at least some subset of Zohar. Hi.
So the Bible is only referring to separation aspect, the Borer aspect.
Right, so the Bavli is still maintaining that it's about Borer, that's why you're doing it, and it's enough about Borer that it should be grouped with them. But still, once you have the format of throwing things into the wind, that would still be called Zora, even if you're not doing it for the purpose of separation. Maybe we don't have to connect it so absolutely. There are different versions of this theory if you just want to know about it. Again, without overly focusing on names, with Shach has an essay to this effect in his Sefer Avi Ezri, Rama, correct? In the fifth Madura. And the Shvisas HaShabbos, this is a also an important Sefer on Shabbos, has a theory like that also, that he quotes from a Chacham Echad. He doesn't like it so much, but there is such a theory out there that maybe there really are two components to what the Bavli is talking about. And the Bavli, even though it identifies Zorer and Borer, doesn't mean to exclude a situation where there isn't a selection going on. So, if that's true, again, this gives us basically four ways to approach this difference. Either we could say there's a straight-out machlokas, the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. Bavli is about separating. Yerushalmi is about spitting, which doesn't have anything to do with separating. Or we could say it's not a machlokas because spitting could be a form of separating somehow. Or we could say it's not a machlokas because the Yerushalmi didn't mean to talk about Zora. Or we could say it's not a machlokas because the Bavli doesn't necessarily exclude other models where there's no separation going on. So a number of different takes to approach this whole issue. Which is a very important practical question. Lamaisa, if I use the wind for purposes that are not about separation, is that going to be a malacha of Zora? Sammy?
How do you say that the Bavli thinks that you could also have a Zora without Torah if you wash on time behind the eyes?
Because the reason it became a malacha, the reason it's there is because of its Borer component. And maybe you could have said the other direction. You could have said that maybe Borer could have been learned from Zora. Maybe if it has one aspect or the other, Zora comes first, it could have covered all of them. Maybe it includes Borer. It's possible. So this is a major practical issue. Right? So what happens if you use the wind to do things without intent for separation? And this comes up, for example, as maybe you got a chance to see, in Hilchos Pesach. How does this come up there? It's related to Bir Chametz. So the Mishnah says, if you had a chance to see, the Mishnah doesn't tell you so much, but it's spelled out in other sources. There is a debate in the Mishnah about the always tricky situation of Erev Pesach Shechal Lios B'Shabbos. Now, what do you do if the 14th of Nisan is Shabbos? So, technically speaking, that's the appropriate time for Bir Chametz. And even beyond that, maybe you need to have Chametz for Suda Shabbos and the like. So you have a practical need to destroy Chametz on the 14th of Nisan, even though it's Shabbos. So there is a machlokas over there about you really, in that year, should you do Bir Chametz all the day before? Or should you do Bir Chametz even on Shabbos? So the Mishnah there doesn't really explain how would you do Bir Chametz on Shabbos? So the Baal HaMor discusses it. And what does the Baal HaMor say? Well, if you want to know how to do Bir Chametz in general, you can look in the second parak. And the second parak of Psachim, which the yeshiva learned last year. So the second parak of Psachim, there is a range of views, a machlokas in the Mishnah there, as to how you should do Bir Chametz. According to Rabbi Yehuda, ein Bir Chametz ela b'sreifa, you have to burn it. And that's certainly going to be a problem on Shabbos. But according to the other views, no, hashpasaslo b'chol davar, you can destroy Chametz in many different ways. And one of the ways that's mentioned before the invention of flushing things down the toilet. So one of the ways that's mentioned is Zora, basically. You can crumble it up and throw it into the wind and let the wind disperse it and basically nullify its existence. So says the Baal HaMor, you could do that on Shabbos. In a situation where it's Erev Pesach Shechal Lios B'Shabbos, and you have Chametz to get rid of, either because you davka should or because you happen to have Chametz left over from Suda Shabbos. So here's what you do. Crumble it up and throw it into the wind and let the wind disperse it for you. So is this some type of heter that really you shouldn't do this, but for the mitzvah of Bir Chametz, you can do it? Yes, it is. But not as much of a heter as you might think. And as the Baal HaMor explains, it's not an av malacha. It's not a malacha issue. Maybe, as the Svarim explained, maybe it's a tirchah issue. It's not the kind of thing you would normally do on the average Shabbos. It's not really in the spirit of Shabbos. But it's necessary for the mitzvah of Bir Chametz. But we're not going to let you do an av malacha. We'll let you do something which is a little bit inappropriate, a terechi yisera, but it's not a real malach. So what do you see from the Baal HaMor over here? There's no malach involved in this type of wind usage where you're not interested in distinguishing good from bad and keeping the good part. And this view of the Baal HaMor, if you got to see it, is quoted in the halacha by the Bach, right? The Bach in Tav Chav Dalet. And is disputed, though, by the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham is one of the minority views in the poskim, who does seem to worry about the Yerushalmi's understanding. And the Magen Avraham is concerned there may actually be a malacha here. But the Mishnah Berurah does not seem to be concerned about this. Mishnah Berurah in Hilchas Yontif also talks about this, because the question comes up, what happens if you find chametz on Yontif itself? After Yontif has started, you find chametz that you want to get rid of. So the Gemara talks about covering it with a kli and destroying it later. So is there a way of destroying it on Yontif? Can we allow Havara for that purpose on Yontif? So the Mishnah Berurah talks about that. And it's clear from the Mishnah Berurah there that he's also okay with your throwing it into the wind. Doesn't think that there would be a Zora issue. Yes, sir?
Mishnah Berurah mentions it twice?
He mentions it in Tavchav Vav, in the Yontif. Tavchav Dalet is Erev Pesach Aliyos B'Shabbos, and Tavchav Vav is finding it on Yontif. So this is consistent with his view in Hilchos Shabbos and Shin Yud Tes, where he quotes the Alfei Menashe that we mentioned a few minutes ago, that does not seem to accept the Yerushalmi, a simple way of reading it. The Yerushalmi that sounded like you were saying, spitting into the air, non-divisional usage of wind, is a problem. So we saw the Mishnah Berurah quoted the Alfei Menashe reinterpreting that. And that seems to be his position in general, that he doesn't believe that that is the Malacha of Zorah. But the Magen Avraham also has an important companion in this discussion. This is what was alluded to before by Jonathan, that there is another major voice that seems to paskin like the Yerushalmi. And who's that? The Rama. The Rama, in the very end of Siman Shin Yud Tes, which is basically really the totality of Hilchos Zorah explicitly in the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama, that the Rama says over there, quoting from Yerushalmi, also quoting from the Or Zarua, who's the major voice in the Rishonim that follows the Yerushalmi, that it's a problem to spit into the air. So this Rama was the cause of a lot of consternation, because, as Peter Hager expressed, doesn't seem to be that the Babli accepts this view, and many assume that lahalacha, that Zora is only applicable when you're actually trying to select something. And that the Yerushalmi statement of spitting into the air is not accepted by halacha. So the Rama quoting it.
The Rama says why?
The Rama just says that line. He doesn't say the whole line.
It might be easier to say that he meant because of Zorah.
He says Zorah.
Yeah, he says Zorah. He doesn't say the last part of the Gemara about that called Dover Shemachas of Ruah.
No, when he said that you're not allowed to speak.
Yeah, he says that's a Zorah issue. I thought he meant to say the whole principle. So this much he does seem to say, but there are the Egle Tal, for example, and others assume that he's just saying this is a chumrah. Maybe he's saying it on a level midrabanan. Even that would be perhaps a little bit of a surprise. There is a lot of discussion about whether or not to accept this Rama, which again the Mishnah Berurah and others do not seem to accept the halacha. It's not necessary to say it's drabanan, which the Rama doesn't really say. But maybe if you want to minimize it somehow, you could make it work with the Balamor about chametz, because the Balamor was saying that maybe there's some drabanan involved, but your chametz outweighs it, so then maybe they're somehow reconcilable. But in general, this Rama finds a lot of challenge in the later Svarim, and from the earlier Svarim. So one of the Svarim that challenges it is the same Tshuva, the Tshuva of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. So we mentioned before, we didn't say what the Shiloh was, that Rabbi Akiva Eiger asserts that the Bavli argues on the Yerushalmi. So he discusses this because he was talking about the following case. He said, he asked himself a Shiloh, it's an interesting thing if you read it. So he says, he was walking around on Shabbos, and he saw something happen, and he was wondering if maybe it's an issue. And he asked himself this question, and then he decided that it's okay. He decided that there's a couple of reasons to allow it. So what was it that he saw? He saw that somebody, what'd you say? Right, he saw that somebody was pouring a little bit of water out the window. And we say a little bit to emphasize the fact that it wasn't a heavy stream, which maybe would have its own power, but it was a light amount of water that he was dropping out the window. And apparently it's not an issue that there was any kind of grass or other things underneath that would have been a Zareya concern. But he was pouring water, let's say, onto the pavement or something like that. But the concern was that since the water is light and it's windy outside, so the wind is going to come and basically spread this water around. So even though that's not the intent, but if it's definitely going to happen, maybe this is a psik resha concern that this is zoreh. Maybe this is like spitting into the wind. So here you're not spitting into the wind, you're pouring water into the wind, but it's going to have the same effect. Maybe we should forbid that because of zoreh. So he has a number of reasons why he thinks it's not an issue. And the primary reason is what we said already, is that he thinks we don't follow the Yerushalmi, that even if it's comparable to the Yerushalmi's case, the Babli disagrees, we don't accept the Gahalach. It's not practical. He does acknowledge that the Ramah does say what he says, which surprises many, such as you mentioned before, the Chayyadam. It's a whole discussion, basically not really accepted the Ramah's Chumrah here. But Rabbi Akiva Eger suggests a whole new Chiddush. Maybe we'll just try to mention this before we run out of time. He suggests a whole new Chiddush to distinguish between spitting and water. And there was a principle we discussed at length last semester, that there are some halachos which might be limited or are limited to gedulei karka. So we discussed this in the context of Dosh, in the context of Ma'amer, of Kotzer, right? There are some halachos which are limited to things that grow from the ground. So Rabbi Akiva Eger assumes, it's a big Kiddush, but he assumes that Zoreh should be in that group as well. So therefore, he thinks it's logical to say that Zoreh only applies to things that grow from the ground. Now we saw last semester that there is a view that animals and humans are considered gedulei karka for this purpose. They sustain themselves from that which grows from the ground, so maybe they're also considered gedulei karka, which is a minority view, but maybe that's the case. The question a second, says Rabbi Akiva Eger, maybe that's what the Ramah is worried about. That maybe Zoreh only applies to gedulei karka, and therefore it shouldn't apply to water. Water is not gedulei karka. So for that reason alone, it wouldn't apply to his situation. And the Ramah, who brings it up by spitting, because that's coming from a person maybe might be considered gedulei karka, maybe not, but maybe the Ramah was worried about that, so he said it's good to not do this. It's good to avoid that because of that concern. And then he notes that the Ramah doesn't quote the Holy Yerushalmi, as we were saying before, that the Yerushalmi's principle that kol davar shemachasru haruach or shemachasru haruach, so the Ramah doesn't quote that part. Because that whole issue maybe is not true even according to the Ramah. And that the Ramah would only invoke it in this context where there's possibly a gedulei karka consideration. That's a very innovative understanding. It doesn't seem to have a lot of earlier basis. There's a contemporary statement called the Menachas Ariel, which Jonathan knows about. So the Menachas Ariel has a little discussion about this where he notes that if you're going to say this chiddush, that gedulei karka should extend to Zoreh also, it would seem you'd have to extend it to Borer, which does not seem to be the case. It's not clear why Rabbi Akiva Eger is so sure this is true. He bases it on a comment of the Magen Avraham. But this is his premise, and he uses that to explain the idea of the Ramah. But in general, as we see, practically speaking, the Ramah's concern does not seem to have a lot of practical support. And the halacha, it seems that most assume that really Zoreh is limited to situations where you're using it for a separation. There's a lot more to say about that practically, so God willing on Sunday we'll fill in some of the practical implications. But first, take Daniel's question. Let's try to quickly review what we said.
I consider the past.
Yes.
So is that specifically by Achila, or is that for specifically by Yuli Karka?
The problem is that Achila and Yuli Karka are not exactly the same thing. So for example, fish. Now you eat fish, but that's explicit that that's not Yuli Karka. So it's.
Well, didn't we have a situation where a fish in certain situations is Yuli Karka?
No, that was the problem was that the Rishonim talked about fish by kotzer, and that the older Rishonim said that it doesn't work because of that issue. And also, not all Yuli Karka are food. In both directions, that's not 100% matchup. Not all Yuli Karka are food, and not all food is Yuli Karka. Even if you extend it to cows. That's the problem. But okay, so in terms of the practice, like I said, so we'll pick up on the. Don't do too much wind usage this Shabbos before we get a chance on Sunday to clarify exactly some of the halacha l'maaseh implications. We'll talk about a lot of the practical implications on Sunday. Again, tomorrow is a parsha day, and today let's just quickly review what we spoke about. So we spoke about the fact that we saw what seems to be a machlokes, the Bavli and Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi, Bavli connecting Zoreh to Borer, and the Yerushalmi have an example of spitting, which doesn't seem to be about selecting anything. And we saw the Gemara Bava Kamma, which says that using wind for Zoreh is a malacha because of malachas mafsheves, but it doesn't mean that using wind for Nezikin should be chayiv. And we had this open question of why is that true? Okay, malachas mafsheves, but what does that mean? It means whenever you fulfill your intent, it's a malacha no matter how you do it? Or does it mean that Zoreh becomes a malacha despite the fact that it's not following the rules? Maybe that issue is in the Rosh and the Yad Ramah, a little bit of a question. And it seems to be two perspectives reflected in the Shuvah's Dvari Yehoshua, who wrote this letter to the Machon Technologia about indirect malachas. They thought that that should be chayiv because it's malachas mashemis and did what you wanted to do. And he thought, no, it's not chayiv because you're not doing anything in Zoreh as its own special chiddush. And then we said this seems to be the general understanding that there's machlokes the Bavli and Yerushalmi, which we mentioned the possibility maybe it's about whether you focus on the intent or on what you're doing. And the idea of the machlokes here was emphasized by Rabbi Akiva Eiger and the Nishmas Adam. Rabbi Akiva Eiger adding the fact that the Gemara Bava Kamma is clearly about selecting because it's all about something that would be auster anyway, and you're using the wind to do it. If it's only the wind that's the problem, then that's not going to make the cut. That's not going to be the issue. But we also mentioned that there were some approaches that tried to reconcile that it's not a machlokes. Why would it not be a machlokes? So we saw three different ways of doing that. Either we could say that spitting is somehow an act of selecting, either because you're breaking up the elements, separating it from the body, different ways of looking at that. Or you could say that the Gemara doesn't mean to say Zoreh is the malacha, either because it's a textual change. Maybe it should say Zoreh, maybe it should say Zoreh, or maybe it should say Zoreh, but it means Zoreh to show you that you could use the wind for other malachas, such as carrying. That was the view of the Alpha Menashe. The other approach was to make the Bavli work with Yerushalmi and say that yes, the Bavli is about selecting, but it's not limited to selecting. Once we have a malacha that's about selecting with the wind, other things that use the wind could theoretically be a tolda of that. So a major question whether the Bavli is at odds with Yerushalmi or not, or whether they can be reconciled. And it's a major practical issue because it comes up throwing things into the wind. So the Mishnah says, at least in one view, you can do beer chametz on Shabbos. The Baal HaMor says that means you're throwing chametz into the wind. And that's not an av malacha, it's just a terech issue, but it's not a real malacha, the view that the Bach endorsed. But the Magen Avraham did not, the Magen Avraham was worried about. But then the Mishnah Berurah does seem to endorse it. And we mentioned that the Ramah seems to throw a monkey wrench into this whole issue by quoting the Yerushalmi Lahalacha, saying don't spin into the wind on Shabbos. And there's much discussion. Does he really mean it as a deraisa? Does he really mean it Lahalacha? Is it just a chumra? Is it a derabbanan? Seems to be against the Bavli. A lot of concern about that. Then we saw that Rabbi Akiva Eiger talks about this in his Tshuva also, where he says this question of if you can spill water out the window when the wind's going to blow it, sounds like the same kind of thing as spitting. So he says not a problem, primarily because we don't pass him like the Yerushalmi in the first place. And even if we did paskin like Yerushalmi, even if Ramah is trying to paskin like Yerushalmi, maybe there's a way to distinguish, and he has this big chiddush that maybe Zoreh is limited to Yidulei Karka. Any questions about any of that? Does that make sense? Someone's following more or less? Okay, so I'll recommend for tomorrow, again, so tomorrow is a parsha day, so I recommend using tomorrow for Chazara. I'm going to ask Corey if you could supply copies of the Shuvah Shubhiki Ve'eger. That might be a good thing also to try to do the Reader Shubhiki Ve'eger inside. It's Simen Chaf, volume 1, number 20.